Carnegie Mellon University is facing renewed criticism over its alleged role in a massive takedown of so-called dark web sites last year. The nonprofit Tor Project believes two CMU researchers were responsible for a sweeping attack on users of the Tor anonymizing network. Last week, Tor's director accused the university of taking at least $1 million from the FBI in payment for the hack. 90.5 WESA's Josh Rollerson spoke with a reporter who's been covering the story since it broke in early 2014.
The Tor Project publishes software tools sometimes used by criminals to evade identification online. The same tools are also used for the same purpose by whistleblowers and political dissidents. Last week, Tor's director alleged that CMU's Software Engineering Institute had been paid for its help in unmasking an unknown number of Tor users over a period of about 5 months last year. The university did not respond to a request for comment, and in statements reported elsewhere would neither confirm nor deny the allegations. It's a complicated case, and here to help us sort out the details is Kashmir Hill, who covered the story last year for Forbes. She now writes for Fusion. Kashmir, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
For those who may not be familiar, what is Tor exactly? How does it work?
Tor is a way to explore the internet while keeping your identity under wraps. The reason they call it Tor, it stands for the Onion Router, and that's because, like an onion, it has many layers, many peels. So when you use Tor, essentially you send a request out to the internet, and it is routed through a bunch of different layers. Basically, you ping someone else, who ping someone else, who ping someone else, who kind of gets a website for you. So as your traffic is passed along, it's harder to tell that you are the person who was going to a particular place. Tor is important for being able to maintain privacy online, but as always happens, when you have tools to protect privacy, there are also, criminals or people with nefarious intent who use the same tool.
Right, but there's plenty of sort of non-illicit uses for this technology too, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the biggest use case is for people who are in other countries with more repressive governments, where they either are not supposed to be getting access to certain sites, political activists, human rights workers, or they want to be able to get to those sites without their activity there being tracked.
Okay, so can you walk me through this attack from last year, how it played out and how it was discovered?
So this was a bit mysterious at the time. There's a big hacker conference that happens every year called Black Hat, and there were researchers from Carnegie Mellon who had a pretty exciting-looking talk planned for Black Hat, and they said they had basically been able to unmask Tor users. And they didn't talk to the press ahead of time, but their write-up of the talk basically said they had, like, unmasked child pornographers and drug dealers, and they had just found a vulnerability in Tor. Before they were able to give the talk, before the conference arrived, they canceled it. And CMU would not tell reporters exactly why it was canceled. The researchers refused to tell reporters, anything more about their talk beyond what had been in the abstract. And so it was a little mysterious at the time, but, anyone who was, had read the description of the talk and seeing that they claimed that they had unmasked child pornographers and drug dealers assumed that they probably had been involved with the government in some way or handed that data over to the government.
And that is very similar to what then happened later that year with this takedown of Silk Road 2 and various other hidden services?
Right. So I forget the exact timing, but a couple of months later, the FBI announced this major bust that they had taken down tons of sites, tons of Tor hidden services sites. They called it Operation Anonymous, as in no longer anonymous. They took down Silk Road 2.0 along with many child pornography sites. And at the time, they didn't say how it was that they had been able to unmask these sites and figure out who was behind them. But people who were reading between the lines said it looks like the CMU research that had been described earlier is very similar to the kind of technology they would have needed to unmask these sites. And so it appeared that the two were linked. Carnegie Mellon would not comment on that at the time, and the FBI did not thank Carnegie Mellon in their press release about the big bust.
So there's all this evidence, like kind of circumstantial, but a lot of it pointing in the same direction. And then the story just blew up again in the last week. What was this latest development, and why is it important?
So one of the people who was busted in Operation Anonymous, his case is ongoing, and recent court documents mention that there's a some university that helped provide evidence that was used to convict him. It doesn't say Carnegie Mellon outright, but it appears that it is Carnegie Mellon. So this is kind of the confirmation that the observers of this case had kind of been looking for. And then it raises all of these issues around, you know, should university researchers be trying to undermine privacy tools that protect, you know, not just the child pornographers and drug dealers that the law enforcement are interested in, but human rights workers and political activists and anybody who just wanted to use Tor for privacy reasons.
Wouldn't, if this was academic research, whether or not it ended up in government hands in the end, wouldn't there be an IRB process that would have to be followed? Wouldn't they have to get approval for this?
Yeah, this is actually one of the, it's not an avenue that I have explored, but usually when you're doing this kind of research, you would need the IRB approval if you're going to have human subjects. And they did make, who knows how many hundreds, thousands of people part of the research they did by unmasking their Tor activity.
Is there any way of knowing if any laws were broken here? What are the legal implications?
So I think there's really interesting questions around, you know, what the government would need in terms of court orders or legal process to do something like this, since they would be undermining the privacy protections of this service. The weird thing about it is that you are passing your web request to lots of different browsers. So I'm sure that a government lawyer could argue that, you know, you've given up your privacy because you just send it off into this network knowing that lots of different computers would see it along the way. To a certain extent, you know, the government may be able to avoid that altogether because if Carnegie Mellon did the research and they were doing it on their own and then they just handed it over to the government doesn't have to worry about the kind of like how the information was obtained because they didn't do it themselves. But I am very curious, you know, what happened as a result of this, whether, you know, Tor sued Carnegie Mellon or the kind of constitutional questions that are raised by the people who were prosecuted based on this evidence. It's going to be really interesting. I think that the people who were busted as part of Operation Onimus will probably challenge the constitutionality of the evidence that was used to prosecute them and how law enforcement obtained it. So I suspect that's kind of the next chapter in all this.
Kashmir Hill, editor of Real Future on Fusion. Kashmir, thanks for your time today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.